The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by AIB. We see Brave and we're backing it through Brexit.
Well, with businesses around the world grappling with the COVID crisis, climate issues have taken a bit of a back seat, but not for our next guest. Paul Pullman has shared a stage with Al Gore, Leonardo DiCaprio, and many others on this very issue. He says big business needs to tackle the climate change crisis, but also the general welfare of workers and the public. He wants a whole rethink of capitalism. The former head of Unilever for 10 years, he's due to speak at AIB's Sustainability Conference as part of Climate Finance Week. Paul, some of the things that you did at Unilever would have been unheard of 30 or even 20 years ago. You moved the £120 billion business away from short thinking, short-term gain, and even, you know, question things like giving quarterly guidance. You feel there's an inherent danger for companies in all of that?
Well, I felt that you cannot simply address the issues of climate change or food security or hunger or inclusion if you are myopically focused on the quarters. In fact, if you are myopically focused on the shareholders alone. The first thing I indeed did when I joined Unilever was abolish guidance, move our compensation system to the long term, stop giving quarterly reporting. And that was meant to create the space for our people to do the right thing, to buy into this longer-term multi-stakeholder model, where we actually said profit comes through purpose, not even at the same level. And as we developed this model and started truly focusing on the people that we served, we also started, not surprisingly, to grow faster and hiring better people that were attracted to our mission.
But was it a difficult sell to shareholders when you delivered that message? Was there a bit of pushback from shareholders? Yes, after a few years, you delivered the results. But did they require a bit of convincing about that?
Well, undoubtedly. First of all, I have to put a caveat in there that you have many different shareholders. And fortunately, there are always enough shareholders that are aligned with your longer term value creation, because they actually are the pension funds and they need to ensure that they get a long-term return and that people can live at that time that they retire in a world that is actually livable. But unfortunately, there's another group of shareholders driven by more shorter-term return, and they're often the most vocal ones and the noisy ones, like these activist investors and others that you're well familiar with. So yes, Unilever at that time didn't have a lot of credibility. There was a concern that I would be spending more time with the NGOs than running the business. And obviously, the data to make a convincing case was not yet available. And we embarked on a journey that we were not familiar with ourselves. So we took a certain amount of risk. But yeah, the first few years were a little bit rougher than anybody who would start on that journey today. Increasingly, study after study, it shows that investing in a greener, more sustainable, more equitable economy is not only a better investment, a better return on your money, but also makes your company more resilient. And ultimately, many companies think that they can outsource their value chain and outsource their responsibilities as well, and that doesn't work anymore. I think consumers are becoming aware. We're better able to measure it. It's better able to track. And you can see, with a few exceptions undoubtedly, who is putting their word where their mouth is and who is doing woke washing. And that's true for every sector. That's not only for business. I think politicians have refined that, sports as well, and some other sectors of society as well. But what I focus on now is to ensure that the bulk of the business community is being held accountable and moves forward.
When you take a longer term historical perspective and you look back, where did you think, or when did the capitalist system as it's manifested today, when did that go wrong? Because there are examples in the past, way back even in the 1800s, when companies were building homes for their employees. And that just seems a long way away from where big business is today.
Yeah, you're right, Richard. And I think most of the origins of these companies are from people that wanted to address a societal issue. And as Colin Meyer in his book Prosperity, he talks about profitably addressing the issues of people and planet. And that's really an ultimate purpose that companies should be having to justify their reason for existence. Unfortunately, in the 80s, we've seen under the Milton Friedman banner, shareholder primacy taking hold. We saw governments liberating the financial markets that created many more vehicles to need returns and invest in companies. And increasingly, we have seen that detachment, if you want to, of the financial market from the real economy. And unfortunately, with increased uncertainty, discounting too much future cash flow, with too much money around in the financial markets, to some extent delegating it to day trading and computer trading and spreadsheets, we've lost humanity and we've pushed businesses to the shorter term under the banner of shareholder primacy. That has not served us well. The number of publicly traded companies has halved over that period, depriving many people from sharing in the wealth creation, and the average lifetime of a publicly traded company has gone down from 67 years when I was born to 17 years now. And we clearly haven't picked the right leaders either. If you see that the average tenure now of a Fortune 500 CEO has dropped to below 4.5 years, then you might say we have a real need to attract the right leaders to run these companies and deal with the current societal issues that they clearly haven't anticipated.
How big a setback has it been in the climate change agenda and the role of big corporations in driving that and improving things to have the President of the United States, the most powerful economy in the world, as a climate change denier and somebody who pulled out of the Paris Accord right away? Does it allow companies to sort of get off the hook to some extent and say, well, you know, he's not backing it?
Well, some companies have certainly abused that situation. But broadly, if you take a step back in the U.S. specifically, with the America Pledge, We Are Still In movement, we actually have 65 to 70% of the U.S. economy making climate commitments. And frankly, some of the major companies that you've seen, from the Microsoft to the Googles to the Salesforces to, again, once more, the Unilevers or the Pepsis and many others, have made very strong commitments on climate change, or now also on nature. And the reality is that with the actions at state level and at city level, as well as at the corporate level, the US right now is actually running ahead of the Paris commitments, partly driven by technology that has moved forward, a cost curve that has rapidly come down, but also on a consumer demand or awareness in the US, where now actually 80% of the people in total, obviously more skewed towards Democrats, as you can imagine, but now believe that climate change is an issue and that business needs to take responsibility to help solve it. That global leadership, unfortunately, has been missing over the last 4 years, and it takes time to repair. So that's a little bit of a setback. But on the other hand, it has rallied more people into moving faster to compensate for this lack of leadership.
And finally, Paul, I'm sure you're an optimist, but when you look around at what you're trying to achieve in getting change in relation to corporate social responsibility, climate change and all of that, are you optimistic about the future?
It's too late to be a pessimist. It doesn't lead to anything. And it gives you a world that I think people overwhelmingly have voted that they don't want to live in. Even before COVID, things were not working. Gender equality would have taken 257 years. We were well on the 3% plus track on climate change, and inequality was going up. Overwhelmingly, people are saying, I want to have a more equitable, a more sustainable, and a more inclusive world now and for generations to come. And it happens to be that study after study shows that with a relatively low investment of $1 to $2 trillion a year over the next 30 years, we can stay below the 1.5 degrees and achieve the objectives of Paris. That compares with the $12 trillion we have spent currently to deal with COVID. So we are already in a situation where the cost of not acting is actually becoming significantly higher than the cost of acting. So this is the moment to do the right thing, to create better jobs, better paying jobs, more resilient jobs, and get a better bang for our investment buck by moving all these global economies to a greener economy.
Well, Paul Polman, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Likewise.